Det er godt. So today we're going to talk about the Korach, the proverbial Passover sandwich, the matzah and lettuce wrap that we eat on the Seder night. I want to begin with mentioning something that I've often heard people say, and I want to kind of demolish that idea before I build tonight's sandwich structure. I have heard people say that Korach is just like a zecher. It's just a memory thing, you know? It's just done in order to remember how something was once done in temple times. And as such, you don't need to really eat it. I sweat the details. You can do something symbolic if you want. Just take a little matzah, take a little lettuce. It's not really important. It's not really important. Important thing on Pesach, you gotta eat the matzah. That's a biblical mitzvah. You gotta tell the story. That's a biblical mitzvah. You have to drink 4 cups of wine, a rabbinic mitzvah. You have to eat maror, today's day and age, a rabbinic mitzvah. The sandwich, you know, whatever. It's a thing we do at the Seder. It's like hiding the afikoman, singing Chad Gadya, or drinking Maxwell House coffee, or some other things people do at the Seder. And the truth is that nothing could be further from the truth. It's simply not true, especially according to the Shita of the Alter Rebbe. And we begin the observance of Korech, of eating the sandwich, already when we raise our matzah to make a bracha. And this is how it goes. I want to remind you all that this class is not going to have philosophy. It's not going to have mysticism. This is a nuts and bolts class, but there's going to be a lot of jurisprudence. This is not going to be a class that simply says A, B, C, and D, here's what you should do. We're going to explain the philosophy, the legal philosophy behind the halachas and what we're doing. You got a Haggadah? Okay. So since you all have Haggadahs, I'm going to tell you to take a look where it says in the instructions for the matzah. It says we let the third matzah drop from our hand before we make this bracha. This is the bracha of Asher Kedishonu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu. We acknowledge that God has sanctified us and commanded us. V'tzivanu al achilas matzah. He commanded us, he instructed us to eat matzah. So let me just refresh your memories from the last class. We have 3 matzahs on Pesach. And there are a host of reasons for that, but on a simple level, we have competing interests. On one hand, we have to have lecha mishnah. We're supposed to have 2 whole breads or wafers, matzahs, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of making a bracha on a double portion. And we're also supposed to be making a bracha on a broken matzah. We're supposed to have a broken matzah, which serves as our talking point reference. This is our demonstration. We keep pointing at the matzah. It's called lechem oni, broken man's, poor man's bread. It's broken bread. And it's lechem sha'oinu alav. It's the bread that we speak and raise our voice over. And we use in a demonstrable way. Say, this is the matzah. Here it is. You see, this is the matzah our ancestors ate when they left Mitzrayim. So we have to have broken matzah. We have to have whole matzah. And because there's a question as to whether or not the broken piece of matzah actually can serve as a matzah unto itself for the purposes of lecha mishnah, we had 3 matzahs. So in last week's class, we learned that you make a bracha on all 3 matzahs. You hold all 3 matzahs together. It's the only time we have to hold 3 pieces or 3 objects making a bracha. Usually on a Shabbos we hold 2 challahs, never hold 3. On the night of Pesach, at the Seder, we hold 3 matzahs together. A whole matzah on top, a whole matzah on the bottom, and a jagged or broken matzah in between. And the first bracha we make is Hamotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz. Why are we reciting a bracha of Hamotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz? Because we're going to eat Hamotzi Lechem. We're going to eat Lechem now. We're going to eat bread. Just because the bread didn't arise doesn't mean it's not bread. It's flour, it's water, it's baked. It was just baked before it had a chance to rise. So it's called matzah. There's lechem, which is chametz, and lechem, which is called matzah. in English, bread means that which has already been baked. But in Hebrew, lechem means that which is flour and water and baked. It can be baked immediately, it can be baked after the process of leavening. And then, after we make that bracha of hamotzi lechem in ha'aretz on two whole matzahs, because the idea of lechem mishnah is have a double portion, so when the manna would fall, they would always gather a particular measurement. Whether you were a portly or obese individual, if anybody was obese in the Midbar, I don't know that, or whether you were in perfect shape, I have a feeling everybody was in shape because there was nothing to eat but manna, and the manna had no toxins, and you couldn't eat any more or any less. Whether you were a very large person or a very small person, everybody got the same amount of manna. It was rationed, same amount. How much was it? The amount called an omer. And then only once a week for 40 years, instead of one omer, the people would take two measures. So we commemorate two measures by taking two individual breads. If we wouldn't take two individual breads, what would we do? Just like take a piece of bread and cut it in half and make it lechem mishnah? That's not two portions. You could break a cookie in half too and have lechem mishnah. It's not lechem mishnah. You take something which is intrinsically whole, then you have a double portion if you take another one. If you take something which is whole and you break it in half, it doesn't mean you have a double portion. It means you have one portion broken in half. So what makes a portion a portion? Do you have to bake tiny little breads? So the answer is, if something was baked as an individual bread, then that's considered to be a piece of bread. Whether something is a bagel, or something is a roll, or something is a baguette, or something is a loaf, or something is a French loaf, it's baked. And whether it's baked small or large, baked independently means it's like its own portion. So you take two bagels, two rolls, two baguettes, two French breads, doesn't make a difference. You fill the mishnah of lechem mishnah. I need two matzahs. So I have a whole matzah on top, I have a whole matzah on the bottom, and I make a bracha of hamotzi lechem ha'aretz. And then, look in your instructions, it says, what do? Yaniach ha'matzah ha'shlishis, the Alter Rebbe writes. Let go of the third matzah. Allow it lehishamet miyadei. You don't put the matzah aside. You just let go of it. You kind of let it slip out of your hands. V'yivarech al ha'pruso im ho'el yoyna. Now you make a bracha on the jagged piece and on the top matzah. Terem she'yivarechim bracha zu before. You're going to be making this bracha. You're now holding only two matzahs. But really, one is a whole matzah and one is only a broken piece of matzah. What should you have in mind when you make this bracha? And here is where we begin to demolish the myth that the korech is just a custom, not very important. Says the Alter Rebbe, v'yichaven lifter gamkein achilas hakricha. When you make the bracha of Asher kedishanu b'mitzvot ha'vitzivanu, God who has sanctified us and commanded us to eat matzah, we have in mind the consumption of the third matzah. The third matzah is going to be used for korech. It's going to be used for the sandwich. The Alter Rebbe says, not only that, v'gam achilas ha'afikoman, we even should be thinking about the afikoman, which is not even right now in our hands, not even on the table necessarily, yifter bebracha zu. What's going on over here? Why do I have to think about the korech when I'm making a bracha on the top matzah and the middle matzah, the broken matzah and the whole matzah? I just dropped the third matzah. It's almost like an oxymoron, almost like a contradiction. Here it says, drop the third matzah, but when you make a bracha, think about the third matzah. Well, if I'm thinking about the third matzah, why am I not holding the third matzah? The answer is because the mitzvah of achilas matzah may be referring to the broken piece. Just like lechem oni, just like the bread that I'm, or the matzah I'm telling the story over, has to look like Passover matzah, poor man's bread, not a whole beautiful matzah, but rather a jagged, real-life kind of matzah. So in that case, the bracha of hamotzi lechem in ha'aretz, well, that can be recited over any matzah. But the bracha of al achilas matzah has to be recited over which matzah? The matzah that looks like matzah. It's broken. It's lechem oni. It's poor man's bread. Yes, we learned this last week. I'm sure you all remember. So now, there's a question. If you remember last week, what was last week's question? What was last week's issue? So which matzah is actually the matzah of the achilas matzah? Is it breaking from the top matzah or from the middle matzah? What was the solution? Eat both. That was the solution, right? Remember that solution? Eat both. So we make this bracha al achilas matzah, And we have to have in mind now the third matzah, which we just let go of. We were holding a third matzah. The Alter Rebbe says, let go of the third matzah, and now think about it. Well, if you just let go of it, why do you have to think about it? What do you mean you have to think about making a bracha? You have to think about the eating of the korech. Let me ask you a simple question. Matzah's finished. Korech's finished. What comes next? It's party time. Now we get to eat. Some people have a custom of starting with the egg.
Yeah?
Yeah?
Egg in the salt water.
Egg in the salt water. Big mitzvah. Okay. Not really, but it's a custom. What bracha do you make on the egg?
Shakol.
Really? You make a shakol on the egg? You make hadama on the egg. This is getting interesting. You have a farm that grows eggs from the ground? You don't make a bracha.
Right, because you had moitzi.
Because you had a moitzi. Do you have to have a mind that I'm going to be eating an egg when you make a bracha on the matzah?
No.
Why not?
Because it's for the whole
meal. Because it's for the whole meal. Do you have to have a mind the fish you're going to eat? Do you have to have in mind the chicken soup you're going to eat? Do you have to have in mind the chicken you're going to eat? Your potato kugel? Of course not. You made a bracha, hamotzi lechem min aretz. When you make a bracha, hamotzi lechem min aretz, which is the bread, the blessing we make over bread, it includes everything that's going to be eaten in the meal. Why am I thinking about the sandwich? It's halacha. It says, I make a bracha, hamotzi lechem min aretz. I don't have to think about anything. I make a bracha al achilas matzah, I have to be thinking about the sandwich now. This is not even the bracha that's being recited over the bread. Meaning the birchas hanenen, the blessing that we recite, thanking God for the privilege of being able to enjoy the sustenance that grew from the ground. This is the bracha we recite over the performance of a mitzvah, namely the mitzvah of eating matzah. Why do I have to be thinking about the korech? Why does it need a bracha? And incidentally, we're told that we're not really supposed to make any interruptions from eating the matzah. You go straight into eating the maror, and then you go straight into eating the korech, and you shouldn't have any idle conversations in between. You want to do this right? Stay focused. Now we have a job to do. So, Nagada is finished. You finished reciting Magid. You drank your second cup of wine. Talk about all the instructions. Say what you do for matzah, say what you do for maror, say what you do for korech, and nobody, that's it, nobody talk now. Let's do our mitzvahs now. We get our mitzvahs done, we can talk later. I'm busy now, I'm doing mitzvahs. So clearly, the korech is not just a custom, because if it was just a custom, why do I have to have be thinking of it when I make a bracha? Especially because I just let go of that matzah. I'm not even holding it anymore. I was holding it. Now I'm not holding it, but I should be thinking about it. Am I making sense? So what's really going on here? So, the Alter Rebbe says in Shulchan Aruch like this. You should know that the mitzvah of eating maror, maror is the bitter herbs, in today's day and age, is not one that is biblically mandated. But it says in the Torah. How could it not be biblically mandated? So the answer is, in the Torah, it does speak about eating maror, but it speaks about eating bitter herbs in the context of eating paschal offering and matzah. As it is written, al matzot umerorim yo'ochluhu. You should eat the maror and the matzah together with the korban pesach. Or more accurately, eat the korban pesach together with matzah and maror. That's what it says in the book of Numbers, chapter 9. It's actually speaking over there about the Pesach Sheni, but this is the same halacha. That's the halacha. How do you eat a korban Pesach? This is not a trick question. How do you eat a korban Pesach? The answer is roasted and with matzah and with maror. That's how you should eat a korban Pesach. That's how you should eat it. So why do we eat maror then today? We don't have korban Pesach. We don't have the paschal offering. We eat maror today, midivrei sefer. It's a rabbinic mitzvah. Why did the rabbis enact this mitzvah? Because the rabbis wanted us to remember the way things used to be in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Zecher LaMikdash. Give me another example of a mitzvah that we do for 7 days only as a Zecher LaMikdash. Only to remember how things used to be in the Beis HaMikdash. Can anybody think?
Washing our
No? Well, we did it all year, but it didn't, was not...
Oh, not for 7 days.
A mitzvah we do for 7 days. Actually, let me rephrase that. A mitzvah we do for 8 days, for 6 days, as a zecher l'migdash. The mitzvah of sukkahs, taking the four kinds. The palm frond, the citron, the myrtle, and the willow leaves, the arba minim, the lulav and esrog. In the Torah it says, ulakachtem lochem bayom harishon. You should take these four kinds on the first day. Does it say you should do it for 7 days? No. What should you do for 7 days? You should sit or dwell in the sukkah for 7 days. Basukot teshvu shivat yamim. The Torah doesn't say you should take the four kinds for 7 days. The Torah says take it on the first day. Lokachtem lochem bayom harishon. Why do we take it for 7 days? With the exception of Shabbat, and that's another story. The answer is, in the Beit HaMikdash, they did take the Lulav and Esrog all 7 days. That's a special halacha with regard to the Beit HaMikdash. That in the Beit HaMikdash, the mitzvah is fulfilled for 7 days successively. Okay, we're not in the Beit HaMikdash. Not only are we not in the Beit HaMikdash, we don't even have a Beit HaMikdash. But there is a school of thought that if you're living in Jerusalem, you should daven at the Kotel. Because when you're in front of the Kotel Plaza, you're close enough to the Beis HaMikdash, and there is a school of thought that you might actually be obligated to take a lulav and esrog just like you were in the Beis HaMikdash. There is such a school of thought. It's a minority school of thought. If you happen to be in Israel, in Jerusalem, on Sukkot, best place to daven. Okay. But we're not there. We weren't there. We were here in Toronto, and all of you took a lulav and esrog for 6 days. Why'd you do it for 6 days? We didn't do one day because Shabbos. Why'd you do it for 6 days? We did it because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the great leader of the Jewish people at the time of the destruction of the temple, said that we need to do things to remember how they were in the Beit HaMikdash. So the first day, it's a biblical mitzvah. And then the subsequent days, it's a rabbinic mitzvah. And what bracha do we make? Asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu. God who has sanctified us and commanded us, al netilat, but he never commanded us to do that. He never commanded us to take the lulav and the etrog on the second, third, or fourth day of Sukkot, right here in the city of Toronto. So how do we do it? Because Hashem commanded us elsewhere that we should listen to what our Sanhedrin, to what our rabbis, our sages tell us. Just like Hashem didn't command us to light a menorah, to kindle a menorah for 8 days in a row. And yet we make a bracha, Asher Kedishanu, b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu, lahadlik ner, Chanukah. How could that be in the Torah? All 613 mitzvahs were given in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. This is near the end of the Second Temple. Second Temple stands for 220 years. This is in the last century and a half. Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu has gone well over 13 centuries. How can it be a mitzvah? A few hundred years earlier, we had a miracle called Purim. Recently read the Megillah. What bracha do we make? Asher kedishanu b'mitzvah tavet sivano al mikra Megillah. How could the reading of the Megillah be biblical? How could Moshe Rabbeinu give us a mitzvah? It happened over a millennia, almost a millennia later. It doesn't make any sense. Over a millennia after his passing. The answer is, he told the Chachamim. So, in other words, because it is a mitzvah to listen to what the sages say, and incidentally, it's a positive mitzvah to follow, to obey their instructions, and it's a negative mitzvah to disobey their instructions. L'sosim hadavar, don't veer away from the words they tell you. So, because it's a positive and a negative, this is what we call a rabbinic mitzvah. This is very important for you to understand for the cadence of today's class. There are biblical mitzvahs, and there are rabbinic mitzvahs. And if you will tell me that according to what I just said, every rabbinic mitzvah is ultimately a biblical mitzvah, I will have to acknowledge that that's true. However, there's no biblical mitzvah to take the lulav on the third day of Sukkot. There's a biblical mitzvah to listen to the sages. So in theory, the mitzvah of taking the lulav on the additional days of Sukkot or lighting a menorah during the days of Chanukah or listening to the Megillah on Purim are all the same mitzvah. But we don't have the same bracha. We don't say Asher kedishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu lishmoa el Sanhedrin. We say the specifics. Why? Because the mitzvah was given to us by the Sanhedrin. So we're given a mitzvah, a rabbinic mitzvah. We follow and recite the bracha that acknowledges that ultimately God sanctifies the Sanhedrin, and through the Sanhedrin we are sanctified in order to be able, or guided and empowered to be able, to perform this act. And it should be an act of holiness, a mitzvah. An act through which we are not only obeying Hashem's word, but forging and nurturing a more profound relationship with God by virtue of the envelope of the mitzvah. So matzah is biblical. Be'erev tochlu matzot. It doesn't say be'erev tochlu matzot u'merorim ala Pesach. It says be'erev tochlu matzot, the evening you eat matzah. That's what it says. If it says in the evening you eat matzah, the evening you eat matzah. It doesn't say be'erev tochlu merorim. It says al matzot u'merorim yo'ochluhu. And so we know that the rabbi said be'erev tochlu maror. Just like it's a rabbinic mitzvah to drink four cups of wine. So because this is the case, when we're going to eat the maror, what bracha do we make over the maror? Asher kedishanu b'mitzvot havetzivanu al achilat maror. But really, God didn't tell us to eat maror. He told us to eat Korban Pesach with condiments. Who told us to eat maror? There's rabbis, the sages did. Do you understand that the mitzvah that's biblical and the mitzvah that's rabbinic is on a different frequency? Can you understand this? Can you understand that it's not exactly the same? There's a different element. It resonates differently. Every mitzvah has a certain frequency. Every mitzvah has a certain zone. Every mitzvah has a certain energy. These are different kinds. It's like AM and your FM dial. It's on a different frequency. Doesn't mean you can't get the broadcast. It's a different frequency. It's a different way of being able to hear the message, different way of being able to connect. So we eat this maror because that's what the sages ordained, so that's what we do. Okay? No problem. So can I eat the matzah and the maror together? I got to eat maror and I got to eat matzah, so can I just eat them together? Just get it out of the way. I have to eat matzah, then I have to eat maror, then I have a miso with Hillel sandwich. Couldn't we make this easier? Take three, conflate them into one. 1 ounce of matzah, 1 ounce of maror, eaten together, done. Done. Why do I have to do one, and then after doing one, go to the next one? It's a valid question. Don't tell me what you do at your Seder, but what do you think you're supposed to do? You think egg salad on the matzah is okay on the night of Pesach? A little maybe shawarma? No? Maybe some baba ganoush, peanut butter, margarine, something, you know, just a, is that okay? Chocolate spread. We'll make the mitzvah sweeter. Shouldn't we make mitzvah sweet? Got a new mitzvah. Take the shmura matzah, put it into maple sauce, and it'll be called a Canadian Pesach. That's it. We'll start a new tradition. You're not allowed to do that. Do you know that there's one night a year, just two nights a year outside of Israel, that we don't dip the bread into salt? And those two nights are the two nights of Pesach. Why not? That's also a Zecher LeMikdash, incidentally. It brings to mind the offerings, the korbanot, that always had to be brought with salt. Why don't we dip the matzah into the salt? Because we don't want to detract from the taste of the matzah. Now we're doing matzah. When you're doing matzah, you're doing matzah. And nothing else. If somebody is trying to talk to you, and you're busy checking out the feed on Facebook, and you're lazy thing and they say, hello, yeah. It's frustrating, isn't it? It is. That's like the face, and we all do it, and it's frustrating. And somebody's talking, now serious, now take your phone away, put the phone on, I'm talking to you. Because you're doing this, do it. You're doing something else, do something else. You want to eat maple syrup? Have pancakes. So they have kosher for Passover pancakes. That's fine. That's not what we're doing now. Now we're not eating pancakes, now we're doing a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah called? It's called matzah. And because the mitzvah is called matzah, what should I focus on? Exclusively matzah. Nothing else. So what happens if I'm going to eat maror together with the matzah? I mean, after all, they're both mitzvahs. Says the Alter Rebbe, one is a biblical mitzvah, and one is a rabbinic mitzvah. The biblical mitzvah and the rabbinic mitzvah, they don't come together. They don't work. One cancels the other. They get in each other's way. You can't be on your AM and your FM dial at the same time. Sometimes when you're on the same dial, you can actually hear two radio stations. Remember once upon a time when people had radios with dials? You know, like when you're in between the dial, you can hear music and the news at the same time? I knew a guy who liked to do that. He liked to have his news jazzed up. It's an interesting thing, no? You still get the news. It's not as harsh. The music in the background. How about listening to AM and FM at the same time? It's not possible. You can only be on one dial at a time, one frequency. You can't be on two frequencies. If you're on another frequency, it actually just attracts. And many people will tell you they can't listen to two radio stations at the same time because instead of getting more to listen to, they have nothing to listen to. It's confusing. You know, there's like yellow light and white light. They say scientifically that yellow light and white light actually cancel each other out. The room is darker at the end, not brighter. So when you have different kinds of light, a lot of the light is in the middle spectrum, but you have an extreme pole of the spectrum of light. If you use both of these different kinds of light, the room will not only not be brighter, the room will actually will appear darker to the human eye because the human eye cannot process the two spectrums of light at the same time. So if I have a lonely flute playing a beautiful song, your favorite song, whatever it might be, don't tell me, it doesn't matter. Your favorite song, very gifted flutist playing this song, but it's a little lonely, it's just a little flute. And then the flutist is joined by a violinist or a cellist. So how does the song sound now? It sounds that much nicer, right? Because now there's accompaniment. So you had one and you have another. The other sound doesn't cancel, one sound doesn't cancel. It's called a symphony. It enhances, one enhances the other. And sometimes you could even have the sound of a particular instrument, which in and of itself grates on your nerves. It doesn't even sound good. But when it's played in concert with others, it actually sounds nice. It adds something. Remember we talked about the ketoret, the incense that was brought into Beis HaMikdash that had to be blended very, very finely, so much so that you couldn't identify a single smell, a single aroma. All the aromas came together to form a total synergy. We talked about the 11th ingredient called chelbana, galbanum, which is actually on itself is a foul-smelling thing. In and of itself, it is not aromatic at all. However, by its nature, because it's so foul, it also sharpens. So it makes all of the other aromas more distinct. And actually, it's not like the ketoret smelled bad and good, but it's all amazing. But the aroma of the ketoret was enhanced with the chelbana, not because the chelbana remained on its own, because the chelbana was blended together, because it became a single voice. So sometimes you can have when there's a symphony, when things are along, they're playing the same song, or there's instruments that mix, you put them together, you have an enhanced situation. Now, I want you to think about a situation where you have two instruments playing very different kinds of music at the same time. How does it sound? Terrible. It's annoying. It can drive you crazy. Why? Because these instruments, they don't jive. They don't mix. One is nice on its own. The other is nice on its own. The two together do not enhance each other. In fact, they bring out the worst from each other. Not only it doesn't make things better, it makes things worse. So when we have a biblical mitzvah, we have to be in biblical mitzvah mode. When we have a rabbinic mitzvah, we have to be in rabbinic mitzvah mode. It's not one and the same. When God tells you do A, B, and C, or when the sages tell you God told us that we should tell you, and because we're telling you, you should listen to us. It's not the same as when God tells you. It's a different kind of mitzvah. There's a certain beauty to the rabbinic mitzvah. In the words of our sages, Chavivin olai divrei sofrim. God says, I cherish exceedingly the words of the sages. I cherish them. Because God cherishes his people. God cherishes his children. And when his children are able to marshal and mobilize every ounce of their heart, mind, and soul to be able to intuit what Hashem wants based on Hashem's principles, Hashem is nachas. Hashem says, wow, look at my children. They're mature. They really love me. They're doing what I want from me. So it brings Hashem tremendous nachas. We're able to generate pleasure on high. But this delight that we generate to God on high from a rabbinic mitzvah is distinct. It's different than a rabbinic mitzvah. Biblical, they're just very different. This is important for you to understand. I know that it's not easy for us to relate to this because we don't tend to think of mitzvahs as energy, just something you do. What's the difference? Do this, do that. Imagine a person who's deaf, doesn't understand. See, he brings two people, says, listen to the music. I brought you more musicians. And they're playing two different songs. And the deaf person, Nebuch, is looking and he says, looks very nice. To me, it looks nice. I don't see what's wrong. I say, yeah, well, Nebuch, unfortunately, you can't hear. So to you, it looks nice to have these two musicians standing side by side and dancing together with their music and playing the thing. But trust me, thank God I can hear, and it's horrible. It's awful. One of them's got to go right now. We can have them play in succession. They can't be together. So when it comes to spirituality, we're kind of like deaf, blind, dumb, and then some. We don't get it. Okay, so we follow the halacha. The halacha tells us. So the Alter Rebbe says, if you take a kezayit of matzah, if you take an ounce of matzah, which is a biblical mitzvah, and then you take a kezayit, an ounce of morah, which is a rabbinic mitzvah, veloyas an yachad, and you chew them and swallow them together, says the Alter Rebbe, leyotze yidechevase, you did not fulfill your obligation. Why? Because that's a mitzvah which is rabbinic. And listen to what he says, shahamorah shehu medivrei seferim, because morah, which is rabbinic, in a very technical, literal, actual way, you don't taste the matzah as much. Why don't you taste the matzah? Because instead of tasting matzah, what are you tasting? Maror. You know, it's like when you're a kid, you want to eat dinner, and your mother said, drown it in ketchup. So all you tasted was ketchup. You still don't make a bracha on the ketchup, but that's all you tasted. So you got the food down. Because you tasted only the ketchup. But you lost the taste of the food. And people who like fine dining don't appreciate ketchup. Ketchup is good for fries. It's good for fast food. It's not good for, because like a fine cuisine, elegant cuisine, you put ketchup there. So what are you doing? It's not, but you liked it with the fries. Yeah, I'm not eating fries now. Now I'm eating these fancy, I don't know, you fill in the blanks, French, give me some fancy-sounding words. Marbleized, caramelized onions. It doesn't go together. And instead of enjoying the cuisine, now I'm tasting ketchup. See, with my dish, what'd you put ketchup in for? And you say, I don't get it. I don't understand. Yesterday we had dinner, and we're eating in this fast food place, and you loaded up your French fries with ketchup, and you seemed so happy, and now I took your beautiful steak with your caramelized, marbleized, whatever, and I poured ketchup all over it, and you're complaining. I don't understand you. And you're like, you don't get it. You don't understand that like ketchup works for French fries, but it doesn't work for this rare steak. It just doesn't work. This needs to have a different kind of sauce. That's exactly what we're saying. Only we can't relate to this because matzah, morah, rabbinic mitzvah, biblical mitzvah, it's all words to us. It's not an actual experience for us. Okay, fine. That doesn't mean it's not true. It just means we don't know how to experience it. The person who's deaf, who doesn't hear music, so that doesn't mean there isn't music. It just means they can't hear the music. If you don't have a transistor radio, going back to our previous metaphor, it doesn't mean there are no radio waves in this room. It just means you can't hear them. If you had the right transistor, you would hear them. It doesn't mean they don't exist. A person says, there's no radio waves. So I hate to break it to you, but they really are. No, I don't see them. I don't feel them. I don't hear them. They don't exist. What would you say to such a person? You're a fool. You're an idiot. That's not the barometer of reality. Is not necessarily what you can hear, see, or feel. The barometer of reality is there are levels of reality. That is a level of reality. Talk to the person who's listening to the broadcast, whose whole life is changing because of the news they're receiving. So what can we see? We can see it's something that's symptomatic. Since the matzah is physically taking away the taste of the maror, that's symptomatic of the energy of the maror clashing with the energy of the matzah. And what happens as a result? Both are diminished, and neither is enhanced. Because one cancels the other. One gets in the way of the other. Avol bezman ha-migdash. But in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it was a biblical mitzvah to eat matzah, a biblical mitzvah to eat maror together with Korban Pesach. So when it's a biblical mitzvah to eat all three, mitzvah shel Torah, einon mevatleis zoi es zoi. Mitzvahs, which are all of the same origin, which are all of the same frequency, which are all coming from the same light, which are all of the same cuisine, which are all the same music or song, they don't cancel out one another. On the contrary, sheshkulan hein ka'achas, they're equal, one and the same. Shekulan kiyum mitzvaysav shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, each and every one in and of itself, on its own, independently and interdependently, is a fulfillment of the will of Hashem. You see the difference between now and the Beis HaMikdash? Between maror being biblical or maror being rabbinic? It's not because the taste of lettuce is different from the taste of a wafer. That's not the point. If the taste of lettuce is different from the taste of the wafer, but they're both biblical mitzvahs, then that's called a synergy, that's a concert. But when one is rabbinic and one is biblical, then they clash. Then they can't be experienced together. One cancels the other. So how did Hillel fulfill the mitzvah in the time of the Beis HaMikdash? He ate them all together. Of course he ate them all together. Why shouldn't he? They wouldn't cancel one another. And according to the opinion of Hillel, by the way, this is the elder Hillel, the first Hillel, because the second Hillel is after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Ein adam yetzi dechavasa min ha-teira, a person does not fulfill his mitzvah. Not only you can fulfill the mitzvah of it together, you don't fulfill the mitzvah unless it's together. That's the way to fulfill the mitzvah. You want to have a lonely flutist, or you want to have a band? A band? The band? The band's got a cellist. The band's got a flutist. The band's got a drummer. Oh, now we got a band. Now we have music being played. Before we had a lonely flute, now we have music. Hillel says, you want to have the experience of Passover, of Pesach, in an effective way? Nobody has a wedding with a flutist. A wedding, you have a band. You have different pieces. It's an orchestra. You want to fulfill the mitzvah of Pesach Matzah Maror? It's an orchestra. An orchestra, you play together. And that was great when it was an orchestra. But in today's day and age, it's not an orchestra. Why not? Why? Because the main instrument that pulled all the other instruments together is missing. So if you have a flutist and a drummer, it's just weird. It doesn't work. If you have a guitarist and then a flutist and a drummer, that could work. Then you have a band. When the lead guitar player is gone, now I have a drummer and a flutist. It's not an orchestra. It's not a band. Now it's noise. I would say, you know what, Mr. Drummer, with all due respect, I'll do the bunga 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 later. Could just let the flutist play the music so I can actually hear the music. You're not adding anything. You're just making noise. That's exactly what happened after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So they said, Mr. Drummer, Mr. Murrer, you're just hacking in Chinik, Mr. Murrer. Like, Murrer, please, get off the stage. When there was a lead guitarist, when we had a Korban Pesach, Murrer meant something. Now, Murrer's out. But then they said, if Murrer's out, nobody will even remember that there was a guy named Ringo Starr. Don't even remember him. He said, I won't remember him. He was the drummer, right, for the Beatles or something? He got knighted today, right? Oh, he said, okay. So here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do, he said. He said, John Lennon is gone, Nebuch. What did he play the guitar, right? Mm-hmm. No. John Lennon is gone. What did Paul McCartney do?
Sing.
So Paul McCartney is going to sing, because he's still singing is nice. Even a cappella singing is nice. And you know what, Ringo? When Paul's finished singing, you come on the stage and you give us some bam, 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 bam. Okay, give us some beat. Give us a beat and it'll be a nice beat. Okay, fine. All right, so this is how the evening went. People said, Vey is mir, this is a wedding. We remember the days when the Beatles used to play. We remember the days when John Lennon was there in full glory. And now what do we have? We have Nebuch, Paul McCartney, a singer all by himself, a cappella. He said, Eich noshir eshir Hashem. How do you want us to sing the song of God? He said. The star is missing. You're right. The Beis HaMikdash is not there. However, life must go on. So what happened? So Paul sang. a cappella, zeloze, as they say in French, nishdos, you know, whatever, it is what it is. It's still something, it's still a nice voice. Okay. But poor Ringo was in the back, nobody had any use for him anymore, because now the orchestra fell apart. So when Paul finished, they said, okay, Ringo, now make a little noise. Now we still remember you, we remember that Amol is given a band. Once upon a time, once upon a time we had an orchestra, and now we have just a lonely drummer making noise, giving us a little bit of grating on our nerves, and, you know, more grates. And then we have matzah playing by itself. Matzah still matzah. You follow what I'm saying? I'm using a lot of metaphors, but talk about something which is a little esoteric. Because it's like to us, like, talk to a guy about John Lennon, knows what you're talking about. Talking about Ringo Starr, knows what you're talking about. Talk about matzah and murrahs, what is he talking about? That's a, mitzvahs, one mitzvah cancels. How can a mitzvah cancel the other? So this is the story. Now, that means as follows. If Hillel were alive today, how would Hillel eat a murrah? If Hillel were alive today, or better, let me phrase that question better. If Hillel were alive today, how would he eat the matzah? Remember, Hillel, when he ate matzah, Hillel was not interested in a cappella singing. He only wanted an orchestra. How did he eat the matzah at the time of the Beis HaMikdash? Together. If Hillel were alive today, how would he eat the matzah? Just matzah. Why? Because that's a biblical mitzvah. Yeah, but we have a rabbinic mitzvah called maror today. I know, but maror is just a rabbinic mitzvah. So you cannot eat matzah and maror together, or you will not fulfill the biblical mitzvah of matzah. He said there's no value to have Paul McCartney singing and Ringo going like this in the back. It doesn't add anything. It just cancels out the sound of his voice. It just gets in the way. So everybody would agree, including Hillel in today's day and age, if he was alive, how would he eat the matzah as we eat the matzah? Then the question is, how would Hillel eat murrah? Ah, here it gets interesting. So Hillel would say, you know, back in my Beis HaMikdash days, I would never eat murrah by itself. Nobody ate murrah by itself. How would I eat the murrah? Only together with matzah, with the Korban Pesach, a sandwich. So, if you want me to remember the Beis HaMikdash, how should I eat the murrah today?
With matzah.
Anyway, it's a remembrance. So therefore, we have this memorial event. He says, you want to have Ringo bang around, at least have Paul make some noise in the back too. Chveis, you know, just like the, it's not much fun listening to a lonely drummer, but with a little bit of singing, maybe Paul can whip up a beat. It'll sound like something. It'll enhance it a little bit. It'll remind us there was once an orchestra. So if Hillel was alive today, how would he eat the matzah? On its own. If Hillel was alive today, how would he eat the maror together with matzah? So, according to Hillel, when you make a bracha, al achilas matzah, it's going to, you know, work for all the matzah, but Hillel would tell you that in today's day and age, there's a biblical matzah and a rabbinic matzah. The biblical matzah is matzah you eat on its own. What's the rabbinic matzah? The rabbinic matzah, Hillel would say, is the matzah that should be eaten together with the maror. It's a rabbinic mitzvah of matzah and maror. And since we don't have a bracha, Asher Kedishanu B'Mitzvos V'Tzivanu, Al Achilas Matzah U'Maror, when you make the bracha, Al Achilas Matzah, what should you think about? The matzah that you're going to eat rabbinically also, even though you're not holding it anymore. Because you're holding now only the biblical mitzvah. You have the third matzah, you dropped it, but you're thinking about the rabbinical mitzvah of eating matzah together with maror that Hillel will do. And when you make a bracha, Asher Kedishanu B'Mitzvos V'Tzivanu, Al Achilat Maror, what should you be thinking about? Think about the maror the way Hillel would have eaten the maror. How would Hillel eat the maror? Together with the matzah. Now, here's the problem. This is one of those things that was never resolved. It's never resolved. It could never have been resolved. Because during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the argument raged. And because the argument raged during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, if you did it this way, you fulfilled the mitzvah. If you did it that way, you fulfilled the mitzvah. And there were two ways of fulfilling the mitzvah. Just like during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there was Jews who lit the menorah on the first night, they lit 8 flames. The Beit Shammai people. 8 flames. On the second night of Hanukkah, they lit 7 flames. And across the street, the Beis Hillel rabbi was screaming at him, "What are you doing? On the first night we light 1. On the second night we light 2. Now let me ask you a question. If somebody were to light the menorah like Beit Shammai today, does he or she fulfill the mitzvah?
No.
I mean, yes, because really the mitzvah is to light even one candle. But would you fulfill the hiddur? Would you fulfill the meticulous method of doing the mitzvah, which is to continuously wax or continuously add? The answer is no. So in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, could you have done it that way? Yes, because it was before resolution. Now that it's been resolved otherwise, you can't do it anymore. This shouldn't be hard for people to understand. You know, there are all kinds of tax laws that are changing. And once upon a time, you could give your taxes this way, you could do the tax break that way, and either way could work. And then at a certain point, the CRA said, no more. No more shtick. Now you can't buy art for $500 and donate it and get a $5,000 receipt anymore. Can't do it anymore. What happened to all the people who did it? They canceled everything. People had a lot of trouble with this. But it worked last year. Yeah, last year it did. It's not working anymore. We passed a new law. Before the jury was out, now the ruling has come. Once the ruling has come, Beis Shammai, B'mokim, Beis Hillel, says the Gemara, Einai mitzvah. Done. So when was this all resolved? This was resolved in the post Beit HaMikdash era. On a specific day, when they got the greatest sages of the time, they locked the doors, took away everybody's cell phones, and said, "We're not leaving here until we get a resolution." And that Mesechta is called Edyus. A whole tractate was compiled that day. And they resolved a whole slew of problems. What's one of the problems they didn't resolve? Our problem here. You know why they didn't resolve the problem? Because it was no longer relevant. Because the Beis HaMikdash wasn't around, unfortunately. Because there was no Korban Pesach being brought and no Korban Pesach being eaten, so there was no duress to come with a resolution. So because this was an issue that was never resolved, and we now are living in the era where much is resolved, but this wasn't resolved, and all we know is we eat maror as a rabbinic injunction to remember the Beis HaMikdash, like we make a bracha on the lulav and esrog as a rabbinic injunction to remember the Beis HaMikdash. So the rest of the sages who held that the maror should not necessarily, does not have to be eaten together with the matzah, when they made a remembrance of maror, what was the remembrance of maror? Maror. But Hill would say, "What are you doing?" Hill would say, "You need to eat it with a matzah. Otherwise, what kind of remembrance is it? We never ate maror like that. We only ate it with a matzah." Now, we're not permitted to make additional blessings, to make an extra bracha. Make a bracha alachilas matzah, make a bracha alachilas maror, and then make another bracha alachilas matzah maror. We can't do that. Why? Because safek brachot lahakel. If you have when you're in doubt, you stay away from the extra blessing. Which means, now go back to your agada, now you'll understand everything will make sense to you. You make a bracha al achilas matzah, and what are you thinking about? You're thinking about the biblical mitzvah of eating matzah. What else are you thinking about? The rabbinic mitzvah of eating matzah and maror. And then you make a bracha al achilat maror. And what are you thinking about? The rabbinic mitzvah of eating maror. And the rabbinic mitzvah of eating matzah maror. Because if Hill was here, Hill would say to you, "That's not how you do it. If you want to do it right, the only way you can fulfill the mitzvah of making a zecher l'migdash is by eating it together with the maror." So what do? We take these two blessings that are recited at two different times, having in mind both of these ideas. We have a bracha that covers a rabbinic and a biblical mitzvah then. And we think about the korech. When we come to the korech, do we recite a bracha? No. So what do we do instead? We make a statement. We said, "Kein asa Hillel bezman shebeit hamikdash haya kayam." This is what Hillel used to do in the time when the Beis HaMikdash used to stand. Hayakorech, Pesach, matzah, or maror. He would put matzah, Pesach, Korban Pesach, Paschal offering, matzah, and maror. V'ochel b'yachad, and he would eat it together. How? Why? Like it says in the verse, "Kamo shenemar al matzah maror yochlu." So because that's how he would eat it in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, if we want to make a memory for the Beis HaMikdash, how should we perform this? In the closest way we can to the Beis HaMikdash. No, we can't have Korban Pesach. You can't have artificial, counterfeit Korban Pesach. That's prohibited. So what's the best thing we could do? The second best we can do is eat matzah and maror together. You understand, my friends? This is totally not in the realm of a cute little thing. This is what we do in order to fulfill the mitzvah according to Hillel. And like so many things in Judaism, that we don't have full resolution, if we're not sure the right way to do it, what do we end up doing? We do both ways. We cover all the bases. There is a question. A question about how the sound of the shofar should sound. We know there's supposed to be a solid sound and a broken sound. And there's a question as to how, what the broken sound is supposed to sound like. One school of thought is that it sounds like a shvarim. A shvarim is do, 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 do. And there's another school of thought. So that's not what crying sounds like. Crying is not, ha, 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 ha. That's not the crying we're trying to simulate. Crying is, ha, 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 ha. Come to my house 3 o'clock in the morning, you'll see. And my daughter does both. Shvarim and Trua. This is one of the real crying is, that's the real crying. So what should we do? How should our shofar, which is supposed to sound like a broken sound of crying, how should the shofar sound? Do, 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 do. So what should we do? What do we do? Blow the shofar 3 times. One says, do, 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 do. One kind of shvarim trua. And then we do, 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 do. And then we do, 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 do. And both of them are framed, sandwiched, if you will, by tkiyas. One famous example of things we do in different ways in order to fulfill the mitzvah according to all of the schools of thought, because we never had resolution. So when you get resolution, we know exactly what we're supposed to do. We do exactly as we're told. When we don't have resolution, the right thing to do, the halachic thing to do, is to try to cover all of our bases. And of course, we know Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, that all of these ideas are Torah ideas and sacred ideas and holy ideas. And because there's no resolution, they're both meaningful and applicable in our day and age too. And that's the story of the Passover rep. So, it's the real deal. This is serious. And the interesting leniency is with the charoses. See, the charoses is an important part of the Passover evening. It's an important ingredient. Why? Because we need to have these visible kind of visual aids. So we want to show, this is the matzah, bitter herbs, you taste it. This is the charoses, this is the mortar. So why don't we just put cement on the table? That's not cute. Because we don't just put ridiculous things on the table. We put charoses. Charoses has to be seen, tasted, felt. You have to go through all the whole experience. So there's even opinion in the time of the Talmud that it's a mitzvah to eat charoses. You should make a bracha. Shekadishanu b'mitzvah lecha charoses. According to the Kesef Mishnah and the Rambam. That's the kind of bracha you would have made. But we don't do that. It's still appropriate to eat charoses. How is the charoses understood? It's understood not as an independent dish. It's understood as a condiment, as an accompaniment to the maror. So the maror originally had some kind of, I'm not sure exactly what it was. It was something that required neutralization. And the neutralization happened with the charoses. In today's day and age, whatever it is about the lettuce doesn't need to be neutralized. But nonetheless, we still dip it into charoses as if to mix together. This is the full experience, the full gamut of the Egyptian exile. So the children, bitter herbs, the bitter taste represents the bitterness of the life we led in Egypt. And the charoses is a visual reminder of the bricks and mortar, the building projects that we had to be involved in. So we dip it in. And then when it comes to the second time we're eating maror, this time we're eating maror together with the matzah. And there are many people who are careful not to make the matzah wet. It becomes like a problem, right? So our custom is we take some dry charoses and we kind of smear it onto the lettuce and then we shake it off. So in this way we fulfilled all the halachic possibilities. So the charoses is fulfilled fully the first time around. Charoses ultimately is eaten. There is no mitzvah in eating charoses per se. So it doesn't say you have to eat charoses each time you eat the maror anyway. But we involve the charoses in different ways. Once for the regular eating of maror and once for the sandwich for the korech. Now it's really interesting that This is the Alter Rebbe's opinion, and the Prima Gadim, for example, has a different approach. He says we should say Zecher leMikdash keHillel. It's a remembrance of the Mikdash like Hillel. The Alter Rebbe doesn't use those words. It's not a Zecher of the Mikdash. This is the mitzvah of Murr as Hillel would do it. It's actually filling a mitzvah. And therefore, because from that school of thought, this is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that should have a bracha. And because it's a mitzvah that should have a bracha, we have to have in mind that we're going to do this mitzvah. So really, we shouldn't be speaking. You want to do it right? Seder nuts and bolts? Want to get it tight? Don't speak. Matzah? Moror? And then do korich. However, there are other schools of thought. And because there are other schools of thought, if you did speak, you don't make another bracha. Ideally, the blessing should apply to the entire range, the entire spectrum of mitzvah observance. But since this is like secondary, it's only the opinion of Hillel. It seems most of the sages felt otherwise. However, there was never resolution, so we cannot simply dismiss the opinion of Hillel. So we're trying to do this as well. We're trying to do it in the most perfect or best way possible, but it's not what we call in Hebrew l'ikuva. If you didn't do it this way, it doesn't disqualify. I will give you an example. It's a problem to make a shehechyanu on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. For Kiddush, for Shofar, it's a problem. I don't even want to go into this now. It's called Yoyim Arichta. That's another whole jurisprudence, another whole discussion. What do we do? So the Baal Koreh, the Baal Tokeh, the one who's going to blow the Shofar, wears a new article of clothing. And the new article of clothing, you make a shehechyanu. And what do you think about when you make the shehechyanu? You think about the new article of clothing and the mitzvah of Shofar. And when it comes to lighting candles on the second night of Rosh Hashanah, and when it comes to making Kiddush on the second night of Rosh Hashanah, what do? We put a new fruit on the table. So when the woman light the candles and they make the bracha of Shehechyanu, what should they look at? The fruit. And then I'll tell you a little secret. And then you're not supposed to make an interruption. From the lighting of candles on the second night left to Kiddush, the woman should be quiet. And then right after the mothers and daughters light the candles, immediately the father of the home is going to make Kiddush. And he's going to make a Shehechyanu. When he makes a Shehechyanu, what's he going to do? He's going to look at the new fruit. And then right after, everybody will sit down and make a Borei Pri Eitz and have a piece of fruit. Because the Shehechyanu is made already. So let me ask you a question. What happens if there's no new fruit? Or what happens if there's no new garment? Do you not make the bracha of Shehechyanu? The answer is you do. Why? Because you still have to make a Shehechyanu. Because it's still a different kind of mitzvah. First day's shofar was a biblical mitzvah. Second day's a rabbinic mitzvah. Different kind of mitzvah. Then if you don't have to make a shehechyanu, why did you put the shehechyanu there to begin with? You need the fruit or you don't need the fruit? What's the answer? There's an ideal way of doing a mitzvah. What we call in Hebrew, lichatchila. Here's the way you should aspire to do it. And then there is bidi'ovad. If you didn't do it that way, okay, it'll work too. But it's not ideal. So when it comes to downloading something new on the phone, and they tell you that it's better if you're on Wi-Fi when you download it. Get on Wi-Fi. You have to do it right. I want to preserve the battery. I want to help the phone. They do a mitzvah. Hachmanish can chine it. What's the difference? The app is here today and gone tomorrow. The cell phone will be gone. Who knows what's coming next to replace it? The mitzvah has been around for thousands of years. Don't you think it deserves as much attention as an Android or an iPhone? Shouldn't we try our best to do a mitzvah right? And when a yid does a mitzvah right, and when we strive to please Hashem, and strive to be exacting, and precise, and perfect in our observance of Hashem's mitzvahs, that in and of itself is a special act of love and loyalty, a special act of homage, a special act of dedication and devotion to Hashem that is appreciated by the Creator. And that in and of itself serves to further deepen and enhance the mitzvah experience. And that, my dear friends, is the story of the Passover sandwich, and we'll say it's a wrap. L'chaim.